Welcome to another episode of Soapbox on 2XXFM and Sin Nation Nationwide. You're with Lee Constable, and today I have Stuart McMillan in the studio. Stuart is joining me from a different field than one that we've actually discussed so far on the show. Stuart is a science communicator, but he actually focuses on the visual communication rather than the other types of traditional communication we may think of. Stuart, what is it that you do? How would you describe what you do?
In a word, I'm a cartoonist. In two words, I'm a comics artist. And then we can keep on going bigger and bigger from there. I like to draw comics about social issues, environmental issues, economic issues, kind of relatively complex issues that people might not have thought about before, and condense that into a comic that people can read to get a different understanding of the world around them.
Okay, so what would you say gets you on your soapbox?
Yeah, well, these days, well, until recently, I was drawing comics about drugs-related issues, so the war on drugs and the way that society looks at drug addiction. I've now turned my attention to environmental matters, and I recently published a comic about the concept of peak oil, which I think is sort of the mirror image problem of global warming in one sense. So, as you know, global warming's about what happens when we take carbon that's buried under the ground and put it into the atmosphere, and the problems associated with having too much carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and heating the planet up. But peak oil is kind of the opposite problem of that, where it's about the limits to what we as a society face when it comes to actually pulling that carbon out of the ground. Because many people assume that we're living in a world where humanity has complete control over our economy and the world around us, that we can just think about how much we'd like to do something and the world will just bend to our mercy. But the problem of peak oil is that we're not just limited by how much we want to be able to pull oil out of the ground. We're actually limited by what the ground itself can provide.
Uh-huh. So you've got a few big issues to deal with then.
Yep.
So on the topic of peak oil, your latest graphic novel, would you call it a graphic novel?
Graphic novel, comic, something like that.
Yep. So if you had to do an elevator spiel on this massive piece of work, what would you tell someone peak oil is all about?
Yep. So, well, what I would say to people is I am explaining the concept of peak oil by describing the man who discovered the concept, who was a geologist called M. King Hubbard. So Hubbard was born in 1903 in America, and he was the first one who had a good, instead of just imagining that we'd be able to continue dragging as much oil out of the ground as we wanted to, you know, way into the future, he actually looked at the numbers and realized that America's oil production was growing and growing and growing. But he did the math to say, actually, even though it's growing now, we can look and see that it's about to peak and then tail off. And we're locked into this sort of bell-shaped curve of oil production. No matter how much we want to continue to keep growing that, the geology of the situation will stop us from being able to do that. So I tell people about the issue with him as sort of the main character, and then after he's made his discovery, I go into the implications of what peak oil means for us as a society.
Okay, so talk us through how you deal with a topic like this that some people might think is quite dry, and how do you make that into something that's, I mean, when people think of cartoons, they think of, you know, flipping over the back of the newspaper and having a look at Garfield or something like that. How do you turn a big topic like this and something that's quite dry into something that's a cartoon?
Yeah, well, you're right that most of the ways that peak oil has been communicated up until now has been relatively dry, so it's mostly been in the domain of fairly dry and boring academic articles where they have a whole lot of text, a whole lot of tables of data, bell curves. I've tried to avoid that as much as possible with my comic. So I've tried to humanize the issue of peak oil by, instead of making it all about the data and all about the bell curves, I humanize it by making it about King Hubbard the scientist. And I try and I'm not dumbing down the issue as such, but I'm trying to disguise the fact that I'm actually educating people as they read it. So it's kind of unavoidable that I need to display something that's a bit like a graph in the comic, but I avoid that as much as possible and use a few little tricks to disguise the graphs that I'm showing people. So, for example, during part of my comic, I've got the guy King Hubbard on a roller coaster, and the roller coaster is pretty much representing the graph of oil production up until that point. So,
nice. Yeah. And I think you should do a series of scientists on roller coasters.
Yep.
Showing their most important graphs. I think I would definitely look at that.
Yep.
So what has been the response so far? When did it come out, and what has been the response to it since that day?
Yeah, so it came out late May, and it was actually the first comic I'd published in almost 2 years, because for the people who haven't read the comic yet, it's a 120-page comic, which is part of a 400-page book that I'm working on at the moment. So essentially, I was bunkered down for a long time after my comic Rat Park, which came out in 2013, doing a long piece of research and writing and drawing for this comic. And yeah, it was a good response. It had about 10,000 readers within the first month, and people sharing it around Facebook and Reddit and places like that. And what's most telling to me is there were a lot of people who have studied peak oil for a long time, who actually, you know, emailed me or posted comments to say, look, you've done a good job of communicating this without skimping on the facts, because that's something I'm really keen on. I want to draw people in and make it understandable to people, but I don't want to skimp on the facts for the people who actually know their stuff.
Yeah, so it must be the highest applause to get it from people who are actually working in this area in that research.
Yeah, like I've had messages from people from the Association for the Study of Peak Oil, ASPO, who've enjoyed it. So
great. Awesome.
I hope it's sort of a one-stop crash course that people can, you know, if they have a friend who's never heard of peak oil, they can sort of send them to my comic and give them a 20-minute crash course, and then the person may not have a perfect understanding, but at least they'll have a pretty good idea of what it's all about.
Yeah, and as someone personally who studied environmental science, I think I would have really enjoyed it if a lot of our topics were given to us in cartoon form. Mm.
Yep.
I mean, as someone who is interested and invested, I know that it can also be a bit of a turnoff to look at a few too many graphs when you're trying to get your head around an issue. So that's really awesome.
Mm. Yep. Thank you.
Have you thought of that sort of educational aspect in a more formal sense? Have you had much interest from teachers or lecturers for using your graphic novels and cartoons for that sort of thing?
Yeah, I've had a few people, particularly with my drugs comics that I've done in the past, people who I try and focus on stories and classic science experiments which haven't really been covered before in great depth. So my most popular comic is Rat Park, which is, people can read at ratpark.com, and it's sort of, I tried to once again give the definitive account of that particular experiment without skimping on the details. So yeah, there are people who are running psychology courses who, you know, have asked for my permission to use the comic in lectures or to reprint it in textbooks and that sort of thing. So, but obviously, the more people that approach me, you know, the more it snowballs, the happier I'll be.
Yep, awesome. And I have to ask, when you're doing these graphic novels, you said it took a long time to make this. How, as an artist, do you keep going and keep the rent happening and, you know, all those things that you need to do whilst also keeping your eye on this, you know, far away but very worthwhile goal? Like,
yeah,
how do you get through that?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I'm in the process of sort of jumping from grant to grant and commission to commission, and using that as a way of keeping the funding coming from all sorts of sources that I can try and gather. And when it comes to such a big project, it's pretty much just breaking a big task down into many little tasks. And I've got a number of what I call mentors, people who I send a weekly email to inform them of what I'm up to, and saying, okay, my goals are doing this and this and this. And then within a week's time, I report back and say whether I met the goal or whether something happened to stall my progress. So it's kind of having a little bit of external accountability from these other people. And, you know, even if they don't necessarily read the email, it's often just the fact that I've sent it out and said, okay, I'm going to do this, that it's sort of a self-accountability thing.
Yeah, that's great. It takes a lot of self-motivation, I can tell. Do you have a lot of mentors who are also into dealing with this type of subject matter, or are they cartoonists and graphic novelists from lots of different areas that you talk to?
The particular people I'm thinking of, they're not directly doing the same thing as me. It's more they are other creative people of different fields who... I think they normally have mentors of their own who they, you know, send some sort of accountability email to. So it's very much just one person sending one person an email, that person sending another person an email, and we're all sort of holding other people to account every week.
A big creative network.
Yeah, but I try and meet as many other cartoonists and other environmental educators as possible just to see who else is out there. And... yeah, I've been recently I did a panel with the Australian Science Communicators here in Canberra, and that was a good way of just meeting some other science writers in town. You know, I'm half a writer and half a visual artist with these comics that I have, which is a mishup of words and pictures.
Yep. So would you describe yourself as a freelance cartoonist?
Yep.
Is that it?
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
And how did you get to this point? I mean, I don't actually know how anyone gets into any sort of freelance career path, because no one ever kind of presents that as an opportunity for you often when they talk about careers. How did Stuart McMillan get to be today's Stuart McMillan?
So up until about 2011, I was just working a normal 9-to-5 job like most people do, but I was doing comics as a hobby on the weekends and at night time, and I'd had a number of relative successes, particularly in 2009. I had a comic called Amusing Ourselves to Death, which went fairly popular on the internet. So those kind of little successes, each one sort of spurred me to make the next one a little bit better and a little bit better. And then by 2011, I'd had St. Matthew Island, which is one of my favorite comics that I've done up until this point. And so in 2011, I went on an overseas holiday and came back to Australia and found myself out of work. And my friends, you know, I was in the process of looking for a normal full-time jobs, and my friends encouraged me to pursue this cartooning thing as a full-time concern. So that's what I've been doing since then. And as I said before, just going from grant to grant and trying to make it a fairly sustainable way of life. Mm-hmm. And my current way for trying to do that is I've launched a recurring crowdfunding campaign through a service called patreon.com. So I think a lot of people are familiar with Kickstarter, which is a crowdfunding platform where you sort of set a date where you want to reach a certain target of money for, and if you reach the target on a certain date, all the money goes into your bank account. So the difference between Kickstarter and Patreon is people who pledge for my crowdfunding campaign aren't just pledging for a once-off payment. It's sort of a recurring month-by-month payment of $5 or $7 or whatever people want to give to me. So I'm hoping there's enough people out there who like my stuff enough to be able to throw me sort of $5 a month, or, you know, even 50 cents a month. It all sort of goes into a big total, and that sort of keeps me in my little bunker here in Canberra drawing my comics.
Wow. And is it one of those things where people get a free comic, or like get their face on a t-shirt or something like that? Is there some sort of mutual thing going on with Patreon?
Yep. So, there are two main rewards that people get if they pledge to do the Patreon thing. The first major level that people can go to is $5 a month. And if they do $5 a month, they get access to a secret online Q&A session where they send in whatever Q&A, you know, questions they have for me. And I'll go to some interesting location within Canberra or within Australia, you know, a nice backdrop to where I'm sitting, and I'll read out the people's questions and I'll try and answer it as comprehensively as possible. So it's just a way for people to ask the questions that they might have otherwise had for me. And the second way is if they pledge $10 a month, they'll get a handwritten postcard from me featuring my artwork on the front and my handwriting on the back, and I'll send them that postcard every 3 months, or maybe even more regularly than 3 months too.
Oh, so
it's just a little personal touch for the people who want to keep me at my drawing desk. They'll get a little handwritten something and a collector's edition at that too.
Yeah, awesome. That sounds really cool. So if you've just tuned in, you've been listening to Soapbox on 2XX FM and Sin Nation Nationwide. My name is Lee Constable, and I'm here with Stuart McMillan, who's a cartoonist, who's been not doing cartoons about fluffy cats and I don't know.
Cats who hate Mondays and love lasagna.
There's nothing like that. Maybe someone should do something like that. But Stuart's been doing cartoons about Peak Oil is the latest one, but also drug addiction and different psychological issues as well. With something like Peak Oil, has there been much controversy when you do comics around the issues of climate change and environmental sustainability? Do you get many bad reactions from the public?
So far, not. I think part of that is to do with the tone that I usually put into my comics. So I try and what I try and avoid doing when I write my comics is I try and avoid sort of us versus them type fights where it's me from a certain side of a debate and kind of just picking a fight with the other side and making all the people on one side of the debate happy and making all the people on the other side of the debate angry. I normally try and avoid doing that. I'd rather focus on sort of mass delusions where everyone in society is just ignorant to an issue, and I try and sort of talk up to my readers, and instead of talking down to readers where I'm sort of the guy who knows everything and I'm sort of talking down to people who for no fault of their own being ignorant to an issue. So I think because I try and be fairly informative and non-judgmental with my comics, I think that's probably why I've had a pretty good response so far.
Okay. And I was actually wondering about your climate change denying uncle versus Hendrix comic, yep, where you kind of you juxtapose that idea of Hendrix, who was like constantly practicing and trying his best to be the best ever and still very modest, and your climate change denying uncle who thinks he knows everything despite the fact that he doesn't.
Yeah.
What about that one? Has that one been controversial at all? Or
it that hasn't been so controversial, mostly because not many people have actually read it. So
I'm in the minority here.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to check it out, it's currently the second most recent comic on my website, or they can go to hendrixuncle.com to read that one. So yeah, the premise of the comic, as you mentioned, is I'm talking about the approach of Jimi Hendrix, who's arguably the greatest guitarist who ever lived. He is reported to have been very modest about his talents, despite how freakishly everyone else viewed his talents. And he was always minimizing the extent of his current talents and always trying to get better and focusing on his weaknesses more than his strengths. And so I use that as a nice little way to contrast with people who, let's face it, have no deep knowledge of a topic such as climate change, people who might have read a handful of Ian Plimer books and, you know, because they've gone to all the effort to read 3 hours worth of climate denial literature, they all they can see is the extent of their knowledge, and they have no idea of the limits of their and the extent of other people's knowledge. So there are many other different topics that I could have chosen to make the uncle in this comic about, but it's more about people who don't have the humility to know when they're overstepping their limits of knowledge.
Yeah.
And I even mention in I've got the comic and I've got an article explaining what I mean by the comic. So I talk about what's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is a psychological phenomenon where people who don't know about a topic know so little about the topic that they have no idea how little they know. And the people who actually do know about a topic, they're more likely to underreport their knowledge. So,
yeah, it's interesting that difference between confidence in talking about a topic and the amount of knowledge you have of a topic. It's definitely something that's a problem in many realms. So it is. I think it's great that you've brought that up when it comes to climate change denial and things like that.
But it's good to be on a radio.
In a fun way.
It's good to be on a radio show like this where we're not at each other's throats. You know, you're not Alan Jones, for example, just berating anyone with a contrary opinion. You're happy. We're happy to walk through things together in a reasonable way, I think. So
yeah. I thank you for pointing out that I'm not Alan Jones. I doubt that he listens to the show, but maybe he could someday. So I wanted to ask about your background. So you mentioned that you had a 9-to-5 job and things like that and got into this area. Is your background in science itself, or are you just more of a science fan, or where did your interest in science come from?
I'm interested in science, but I haven't done a degree in science or have any accreditations like that. But I was good at it at high school. I continue to read science magazines and books about science, and I'm married to a scientist as well. So as for my background, I've worked in behavior change. So I've worked for Brisbane City Council's energy efficiency program, which is about getting people from a certain lack of awareness about their own energy usage in the home and increasing their energy efficiency behaviors. So it's about sort of how to communicate with people and get them on board to do something positive. I've done similar things with the Red Cross Blood Service as well. So getting people who are either unaware of blood donations and getting them to donate blood for the first time, or getting people who are already donating blood and getting them to donate platelets or plasma donations. So it's all about sort of introducing people to new ideas and getting them to change their behavior or attitudes. So yeah. I guess in some ways the comics that I'm drawing are an extension of that, except instead of being directly paid by an organization, I'm just deciding things that need to be communicated and trying to communicate with people.
Yeah, awesome. And I often think that the communication of science is just as important as the science itself, because, you know, science can sit on a shelf somewhere and be as true as anything, but if people aren't there to actually implement it and get people to listen to the science, then what is the point? So that's wonderful. Do you find that you've been able to talk to a lot of scientists over the time about your comics, and what has their reaction been to your way of communicating their science?
I'm lucky enough that many of the scientists that I draw comics about are long dead. So it's rare when I have someone who's still alive and able and willing to read one of my comics. But with my Rat Park comic, Bruce Alexander is luckily still alive and still doing research very much in the same vein of the Rat Park experiments. So he was sort of surprised and delighted when I sent him a draft version of the Rat Park comic and also the final version of the comic when it was ultimately published. And he was very glad to see his research sort of turned into, or to see himself turned into a sort of a comic star of sorts. And I'm also drawing a comic about Herman Daly, the founder of ecological economics. And he has seen an early draft of my comic, and he's given me some positive feedback to say that I've done a good job of, once again, communicating and wrapping up his ideas into something that a layperson could understand. So that's always good. That's two out of two living scientists who've approved of the way that I portray their work.
Wonderful.
Unfortunately, the guy I'm currently drawing a comic about, Buckminster Fuller, and he passed away about 22 years ago. So unfortunately, he can't read this comic.
You might need to start writing about more living scientists.
I know. Well, the thing is, I like to let the dust settle a little bit before I draw something. So that's always, I'd rather speak about something where the world's had a bit of time to absorb it, and I've been able to see the reaction of other people. So
yeah,
can't be on the cutting edge and all the time.
No, not all the time. That's great. And I think after all that, we haven't actually talked about the issue of peak oil.
Oh, yes. Coming full circle.
Yeah, coming full circle. So what do you think are the main messages that you'd like people to take away from reading Peak Oil?
So people in general are really unaware of how much oil has a role to play in our quality of life. So all of the food in our cupboards has come to us because a truck has driven it to the store. We've probably driven ourselves to the store in an oil-powered car. And not only that, the food has been harvested with oil-powered harvesters. Everything in the production process has had oil involved in the manufacturing somehow. But the point of peak oil is that the rate at which we can obtain oil from the crust of the earth isn't limited by how much we want to drill it out of the ground. It's actually limited by the factors, the geological factors, which limit our oil industry. So even though we might want to have oil constantly growing and growing and growing into the future, peak oil says, well, actually, we're hamstrung by the amount at which we can actually take oil out of the ground, and we need to we're forced to look to a future where oil supplies decrease and decrease as time goes by. The thing is, we've already exhausted the easy sources of oil in the world. So when they first drilled for oil in the United States in 1859, they only had to drill down 22 meters to find oil. And that was a highly pressurized oil field right near the surface that they could obtain very easily. But when we drill for oil these days, we often have to go down 1 or 2 kilometers, and often we have to go through 1 or 2 kilometers of ocean, and then once we're down to the bottom of the ocean, through another 1 or 2 kilometers of rock. So it's getting harder and harder for us to obtain the oil that feeds our economy. For every, 100 years ago, we'd invest 1 barrel of oil in discovering an oil field and we'd get 100 barrels in return. But now when we invest 1 barrel of oil, we're only getting about 10 or 15 barrels of oil back. So essentially, we've gotten very used to having all of this energy at our fingertips, but I guess the message of my comic is we shouldn't count on it happening into the future simply because we want it to happen.
Okay, and as far as behavior change, you talked about how that was one of your main passions. How do you think, or how would you hope that people would change their behavior?
On an individual level, there are a number of things that we can do to reduce our oil consumption, and most of them are pretty obvious. They're to do with the way that we transport ourselves around town, and the way that the types of goods and services that we buy and how they come to us, whether they come from a long way away, whether they're used or whether they're produced with energy efficient factories. But I guess the reason why I'm drawing this comic in the first place is because there's only so much that we as individuals can do. Even if you and I both adopted very energy efficient oil light lifestyles, even if we are making a difference, there's still a general tide in society which is using large amounts of oil. So I guess the reason why I've drawn the comic is because we really need to have a mass discussion about this as a society, and talk about ways that we can consciously as a society step down our oil use over time. Because it's, I guess, what peak oil as a concept means is that there's no real way that we can, basically the graph isn't going to continue rising. It's going to plateau and then it's going to drop off. So if that's the future that we're facing, we need to, if that's the way that supply is going to go, we need to find a way to make our demand match supply. So we essentially, I'm drawing the comic because there's mass ignorance about the topic of peak oil, and the first stage is awareness, and the second stage is discussion. So that's where the comic comes in.
Yeah, it's bold but important.
Yep.
So this brings us to the end. If you've been listening, you're on Soapbox with Lee Constable on 2XXFM and Sin Nation Nationwide, and I've been speaking to Stuart McMillan, a cartoonist, about his work on peak oil as well as other very important science-related issues. So, Stuart, the final question is, if there was one thing that you'd like people to go away after listening to this and learn more about, what would it be?
Peak oil, Lee.
Especially, wow.
Especially peak oil in the comic format that I've drawn. So if you've listened to this comic and you've had some curiosity about what I've been talking about and the way that I've explained the concept in my cartoon comic format, head on over to peakoilcomic.com and basically give yourself a 20-minute crash course in the science of peak oil, the human, some of the human factors associated with the discovery of peak oil and the controversy, the fact that the scientist himself was almost censored by the oil industry, by Shell Oil, all the human factors associated with the discovery of the concept. So, head on over to peakoilcomic.com and give yourself a 20-minute crash course in this topic, which I think is just as important as global warming.
Okay, thanks very much for joining me on the show, Stuart. You can tune in next week for another episode of Soapbox.
Thanks, Lee.